Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Dr. Kavita Palod-Siksaria. It was about her dissertation, Hindu-Indian-American Mental Health. And today, we are continuing that conversation. Let me share some things about our guest, Kavita Palod-Siksaria. She is a second-generation Hindu-Indian-American who is very active in her community. She received her Ph.D. in clinical psychology from Rutgers University and now has her own practice, KPS Psychotherapy in Maryland, but serves clients around the country through telemedicine. You can find out more at www.kpspsychotherapy.com. And we welcome once again to Common Threads, Kavita. Hello, Dr. Kavita. How are you doing?
Thank you. Doing well today, Fred. How are you?
Just fine, thanks. So let's start out with a question that I've been curious on. I'm trying to remember, years ago, I heard a very conservative fundamentalist, I believe Pentecostal TV preacher, and he was talking about psychology, and I forget his exact words, but I know that his comments on psychology were very derisive. He didn't believe in psychology. He was basically saying, if you have problems, go to your pastor, that psychology is mumbo jumbo. That was the gist of what he was saying. Now, we know that mainstream Christianity does not believe that. Christians go to psychologists and psychiatrists all the time. And there are even people who market themselves as Christian psychologists, Christian counselors, etc. So I want to be very clear that I am not saying that Christians in general poo-poo psychology. But there are some, apparently a small minority that might. I'm wondering if there's anything in the religion itself of Hinduism that might discourage someone from seeking help. Has anyone ever said to you, well, you know, it says in the Bhagavad Gita or the Vedas that blah, 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 and because of this, I can't go to a psychologist. Is there any reality in that?
Well, I actually think that no one's, you know, directly quoted the Bhagavad Gita to me, but I have picked up on the sentiment of why would I go to a stranger when I could go to someone who I admire in my life, who's living the values that, you know, I believe in to do this. And so, you know, I think the way that I conceptualize it, for a long time, therapy for Hindus was through a guru-shishya relationship, which is a teacher and their student, right? And that closeness allowed for someone to be there for the mental health needs of their student as well. You know, I like to joke that maybe Krishna was the first therapist, and the Bhagavad Gita is a really great session of therapy. But I think that there's a lot of opportunities even in recognizing that it can feel very strange to own this idea that therapy is with someone who is the opposite of someone who you're close to and feel connected to, and is rather someone who's able to hold these boundaries and is objective. But it needs to be understood and it needs to be explained. So there's some inherent, if not truth, then this idea that makes a lot of sense, that it feels like Hinduism says that we're supposed to turn to the people that we know rather than turning to people outside of us in order to get help. Does that make sense?
It does. It makes a great deal of sense. Thank you. Do you sometimes come across patients where, now again, you are a licensed psychotherapist, a psychologist. You are not a psychiatrist.
Correct.
Do you come across patients where you feel they need medication and you have to pass them on to somebody else?
Yes. Yes. Well, often it doesn't feel like a passing on, but rather a let's rope in someone else who can help us make sure that all of your needs are being met, because sometimes the distress is so high. Sometimes it's clear that there's a biological element, but it's really important to get a little bit of help to get started on the process of healing.
So if you found somebody who needed medication, your relationship may still continue with that person?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually think it's really, really important to continue therapy, even if you're getting medication, because as medication maybe makes it easier biologically to lift a haze, to lift the physical pain, you're still working on being able to access your strength, your resiliency, your strategies to go through life, making sure that your values and your goals are being met, right? It becomes even more important in some ways to be able to say, okay, I got this boost from medication, but I will tell you, very, very few people go in hoping to be on medication for the rest of their lives. That's important for some people, but for so many, it's a, okay, this is something to help me jumpstart, but I want to make sure that I'm doing things that feel more sustainable in my life. And I also like to quip that, you know, psychotherapy has fewer side effects than medication, which is why it's, you know, a more long-term, sustainable option, especially in conjunction with medication.
You say in your dissertation that South Asians report more physical symptoms. What does that mean?
Yeah, so, you know, it's very common across all cultures, to be honest, to see that depression can be first manifested in the body aches, the you know, tension in the shoulders, the headaches, the lethargy, the fatigue, because we're struggling, and that's of course going to impact our body. You know, it's so well documented the way that, you know, stress hormones can really wear and tear down our systems. And so, you know, anxiety clearly manifests in the body that way. And so does depression, and so does everything. And so specifically what I meant is that while sometimes you can see that people are more able to access that, I'm sad as well as my body is aching, I'm stressed as well as my body is aching. And there's not, it's not because, you know, I've been lifting boxes for 12 hours. It's because I haven't been able to process this grief or, you know, something else. And so the depression is what I need to work on to be able to ease my pain. And some people are less able to access that. They're less able to notice their mood. They're less able to notice, you know, psychologically what's going on. And so they focus on the pain, which is more tangible and feels more important to them to be treated often medically.
How much does being a religious or ethnic minority play into mental health? I've spoken to some people who were South Asian, and I've spoken to Hindus, and I've spoken to Muslims. And I know that, for instance, some Muslims feel that they have to battle both Hindu phobia and Islamophobia because, first of all, well, because they're Hindu, and some people may oppose them for that, and because other people may assume that they're Muslim, and so they have to fight that battle as well. And I'm wondering if in your practice or even in your study, if you haven't connected with this personally, if you see that that is a challenge in the Hindu American community?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a challenge that I can, you know, relate to personally, where there's the element of our identity sometimes being mistaken, and that can lead to a lot of pain. And then there's times when our identities are not mistaken and we're attacked, and that leads to a lot of pain too. And I think any time that you're a minority, it absolutely is really fundamental to the way that you see yourself and the way that you, you know, walk about the world. Like, it can be for so many people who are minorities of any stripe, such an exhilarating moment the first time that they realize that they're in a room with other people that are just like them, because they are constantly otherwise assessing whether or not their minority status leads to some type of threat.
Yeah, I actually knew a gentleman years ago, and I always felt that there was something out of balance because I could never get into a conversation with him where he did not turn it into talking about the challenges of being a minority. And he would lash out at American culture. He would lash out at Muslims. And believe me, we could be talking about the weather, and he would find a way to bring it back to that. And it got to the point where I really had a hard time connecting with him in person, because I just knew this is what I was going to have to deal with for an hour. So I'm assuming that this is somebody who really could have done with some therapy.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And for the record, I think about 98% of people would leave therapy feeling better in some way. But this person definitely sounds like someone who's carrying a lot of pain and frustration, and that's really surface level and is really, really coloring the way that they see the world. And, you know, they may have so many really difficult experiences and really valid reasons for the way that they're feeling, but they also have the potential to be able to do more than that, to see more than that, to potentially, you know, be able to engage with you and appreciate the weather on that day.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads here on WGBU. My name is Fred Stella, and with me today is Kavita Palod Siksaria. She is a psychotherapist, and we're talking about her dissertation, Hindu-Indian-American Mental Health. And along the same lines, you say that some of the challenges that your clients face is a gross overgeneralization of Hindu culture. Do you hear the same generalizations consistently, and if you do, what are they? What frustrates them about being in this culture that may not really fully appreciate or be aware of Hindu culture?
Yeah, I mean, like, one of the first examples that comes to mind, right, is the person who was, I think, walking through the mall during Christmas and doing Christmas shopping, but ran into someone, and that person said Merry Christmas, then felt embarrassed and just didn't know how to recover from that, and that person feeling disappointed because they want to say Merry Christmas and they're celebrating too. They're trying to engage in that aspect of what's, you know, become American culture and not just Christian culture in some ways, and feeling that they're misunderstood in that way. So that can be something. In terms of, you know, just feeling Hindu culture generalized, I think, you know, the world is smaller, and a lot of times politics seem to come up more often these days than they did before. And so there can be a huge frustration with a lot of people between conflations of being Hindu and being, you know, a specific supporter of a political party in India, which can lead to them feeling really misunderstood and kind of boxed into an identity that doesn't fit for them. Or, you know, that Hindus can believe a lot of different things, and some may just not ascribe to the ritual aspects of it at all, and maybe more into Jnana Yoga path, or, you know, just more philosophy or understanding, and then feel confused by questions and assumptions in that vein.
I've always known, and I think it's fairly common knowledge, that people who are Christian and either psychotic, schizophrenic, I'll leave it to you to do the diagnosing, but oftentimes they tend to visualize Christian imagery, that their religion becomes really a significant part of their psychoses. Whether it's they're hearing voices and the voice, the main voice might be Jesus or the Virgin Mary or whomever, or that they feel that they are the incarnation of Jesus, etc. I'm wondering if Hindus do the same thing. If you're a devout Hindu and yet you are suffering from psychoses, are you more likely to bring your religion into psychotic episodes and be Krishna or think that you have all these gopis waiting for you in the garden at night? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand your question. I am not super familiar with research on this, so I'm not 100% sure, though as you're saying, one would expect that to be true. I do know that I read a paper a long time ago, so of course I'm not going to be able to cite it, but I did see that in a lot of ways, the delusions that characterize schizophrenia can be far less damaging in other parts of the world, specifically the subcontinent of India. People find that the hallucinations and the delusions tend to be more helpful and less persecutory, or, you know, less encouraging someone to hurt themselves, leading to, you know, the schizophrenia being a far different flavor in terms of, you know, prognosis and treatment and everything, which I always found was really fascinating. And I didn't see a lot of theory on why that is so different, and it seemed to be kind of this Western versus Eastern countries dynamic. But I think there's a lot to explore there.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I would like to know more about that at some point. When you were talking, it all of a sudden made me remember someone I knew who did think that he was either Jesus or some God-ordained agent, and he jumped out of a window one time.
Goodness.
Yeah, and it wasn't a first story. It was at least probably two stories, because he didn't hurt himself too badly, but he thought he was jumping on Satan. So when you talk about people harming themselves, that came to mind. What is also interesting is that some saints, now this I believe would cover a wide swath of religions, or at least the religions who acknowledge saints, people who are somehow more connected to the divine. So we can talk about Hinduism, Buddhism, Catholicism, but there are some people in those traditions who are called saints, who exhibit really interesting behaviors. When we look back in history, it's so easy to look, to read about the life of a saint and perhaps the eccentric behavior that they might exhibit, and call it good, call it God ordained. But then if we if we see it close up, if we know somebody who is exhibiting this kind of behavior, we might get worried. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many people wonder about, you know, if the saviors that are predicted in a lot of religions were to come, if they would just end up in a hospital, because we wouldn't know how to understand that, right? And I think, however, that the field is evolving and starting to understand that there's less of a definition of what is, you know, normal, in quotes, or typical, and that more and more what we need to be able to assess is how is this impacting functioning, and if someone looks strange and is doing things that maybe break some societal norms, but are able to show that they're functioning, that they're meeting their goals for themselves, then it's really important to understand and accept that type of behavior, so that the field can continue to grow and be, you know, inclusive and not overly pathologizing or doing a lot of the failures of the field in the past, right? We've all heard just really, really terrible stories about how people were treated in the 18th and even early, mid-19th century, 20th century. Yeah.
Right, because people saw them as insane when they really weren't.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You, in your dissertation, you talk about some forms of therapy that are particularly Hindu. For instance, you bring up Ayurveda. So if you have a Hindu patient who is familiar with Ayurveda, are you comfortable with being open about that and including it in your therapy sessions?
Yeah, absolutely. I have not yet had the pleasure of such an experience, but I think it would be really lovely to be able to talk about the focus on balance that I see throughout Ayurveda, to be able to talk about how feeling that one's balance through everything that we put in our body, everything that we surround ourselves with, can be key to healing. I think that could be really, really powerful work for someone. And I mean, even without a familiarity with Ayurveda, I think those themes come up often.
And how about past life regression? I know that not every therapist in the world sees a value or even reality in that, but is that something that you would offer or something that you would at least study?
Honestly, no. I have no familiarity with any of that type of work or even any type of hypnosis, so I wouldn't feel comfortable, and it would certainly feel far too overwhelming to study to even pretend that I could develop competence in that to serve a client. If someone showed a lot of interest, I would hope I could find proper referrals and not be, you know, dismissive or pathologizing of their curiosity and their wanting to seek that. But I certainly don't feel like that's something I'd be able to offer myself.
And finally, in just the last couple of minutes that we have left, you said something in the study that kind of surprised me. You said that of all the religious groups involved in a study, Hindus found prayer the least helpful in psychological matters. Could you expound on that a bit?
I think that I struggled to find a lot of the context or reason behind that, but just the finding itself, which is always really frustrating in academia. So I'll just offer some of my theories on why that may be. I think there may be a different relationship in Hinduism that's espoused with God, where you know, there's such a belief in karma, this law of, you know, every action has a reaction, that just praying isn't necessarily going to be the solution until you're able to do the work that's necessary to make things better. Though, you know, certainly I know that there have been times when feeling overwhelmed, I've turned to prayer to hope that the universe is, you know, gonna cooperate with me and help me out a little bit. So yeah, like you, I was surprised and haven't fully grappled with what that means or why that is
yet. Okay, fair enough. Kavita, we are down to the wire for this episode of Common Threads. I want to thank you so much for your time today and last week as well.
Thank you so much. It's really been such a joy and such, you know, just stimulating and interesting banter, some things I haven't thought about before, but I really enjoyed talking to you.
Wonderful. We appreciate that. You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. Kavita Pallode-Saxaria has been our guest today. We've been talking about her doctoral dissertation, Hindu-Indian-American Mental Health. Please join us again next week here on Common Threads.